Blog Talk Radio.
Tackle some pretty tough topics, and one of those topics today, I have to tell you, I have had nothing but glitches. I actually got everything up and running about 90 seconds ago, so it looks like the music bed is just, you know, keeping up with my day here, folks. But hopefully everything's settled down now. Hopefully we've got all the technologies worked out. We're the show that tackles some pretty tough stuff, and today we're tackling rape kits. And I think anybody who listens to Law and Order or even remotely picks up a newspaper knows that there's a huge, huge problem with rape kits and the backlog of rape kits and rape kits sitting on shelves while rapists go free and rape other people. And it's a huge issue. There are, however, some states that are making marvelous progress in that. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk with our guest today. And our guest, well, you know what, Erica, I'm going to let you introduce yourself since I am so befuddled today. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be interested in rape kits.
Yeah, my name is Erica, and I am stationed here in Seattle, Washington, and I've been working on getting rape kits tested and reformed, the system reformed for dealing with rape kits here in Washington State since about 2013. So I've been an activist out in the community and also in the Washington State Legislature.
Okay, and so we are in Washington State, and Erica, mm-hmm. how do you say your last name, Teschke?
Teschke, yeah, that's correct.
Teschke. Oh, I got it mm-hmm. right. Hallelujah.
No, I know. You may be the first.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you work in broadcasting for a while, and pretty soon you just pray that everyone will name their child Bill or Judy, and their last names
right.
are always Joe or Smith, you know, I mean, it's just too much to try and deal with all these other names. But what got you interested in rape kits and the issue with rape kits?
Well, quite a few years ago, I had read an article in, I believe it was the New York Times, about rape kits in New York City and how they had been through the process at that point in time of discovering that they had 17,000 untested kits on their shelf. And they went through and tested
17,000.
Yes, 17,000. Quite a few, and they, I believe, so far, that's been the largest amount of any single city. And they went ahead and tested all their kits, and it brought the arrest rate for crime in that city from 40 to 70%. And 40% is already a high arrest rate for rape in any city, but for it to bring it up that high to 70% was quite telling. And I remember reading that, and my first thought, which is funny now that I've been doing advocacy work in my own community, is the question I get from most people is, I thought all rape kits went to the lab. I thought, you know, as many folks do, that piece of evidence is so super important, and it is the best connection to solving that crime. And I just figured they went to the lab. I was astounded that they didn't, and, you know, to the tune of 17,000 in New York City was quite astounding to me. And, you know, I had read that article, and I sort of set it aside and thought about it for a while, and then about a year or two later had read some more articles, and by then more and more was happening across the nation, and they were finding more and more kits in numerous cities, Detroit and Cleveland now being quite legendary. They had, you know, I can't remember the exact numbers, but somewhere around 12,000, 11,000 in Memphis. And again, I was astounded, and I thought, you know, I'll just check out and see what's happening in Washington State. And that's how it all got started. When I looked at Washington State and I went out to the Joyful Heart Foundations and the backlog.org site, where they had just recently done a strong push to start trying to end the backlog across the country and identify the reasons why the backlog existed, I went out there and I looked at Washington State and nothing had been done yet here. No counts had been done or any sort of concerted effort had been put forth. So I thought I'd make a few phone calls.
And what year was this?
This is 2013.
What year was this, Eric?
2013.
Just 2 years ago?
Yeah, the end
of... Oh, my gosh. Erica, are you there? Oh, my gosh. Erica, are you there? There we go. Erica, we lost you for a second.
Okay, am I back now?
You're back now.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
Okay.
So when I say that...
So this is 2013.
The end of 2013.
And how bad was Washington State's backlog?
This is pretty typical across the nation.
Okay, Erica, are you on a cell phone?
Nope, I'm not on a cell phone.
I'll be darned, because we keep losing you. Okay, so how bad was this backlog?
So in Washington State, as it is across the nation, nobody really knew. And that's typical. You just part of the problem is lots of the law enforcement jurisdictions don't know. They have several. Take Seattle Police, for example. Over our statute of limitations here for rape is 10 years, and over those 10 years, we've had four different databases used to track evidence. And one of those crashed, and they only have paper documents. Two of them, nobody really knows how to do a search on. So, as you can see, just figuring out how many kits are sitting on the shelf can sometimes be a monumental task in and of itself. So at that time, Washington State had no idea. Yeah.
And why? I'm like you. Before I realized that this was an issue, I thought, well, there's a crime that takes place. The crime scene investigators come out, just like we've seen on TV, and they collect everything in little paper bags, and they do everything, and then they send it to these wonderful lab people, and then they have all the information they need to arrest. Well, why would they decide not to send something to a lab? That makes no sense to me.
Right. So especially for rape kits, you know, I can speak specifically for those. And there's really five, there's lots of reasons, but there's really five main reasons a rape kit doesn't get sent to the lab. One is there's no, in many places, this has changed in a few states, but and it's, you know, becoming more prevalent, but most places don't have laws in place that require that evidence be sent to the crime lab. So there's no one anywhere saying you have to send that rape kit to the crime lab. So lots of times what happens is a judgment call falls to the police or prosecutors on a case. And so they'll look at a allegation of rape, and they will sort of make judgment calls as to whether they think that case is going to be prosecutable or not. They have to decide whether they think the witness is sketchy, if there's been drinking involved. A lot of it comes down to whether or not they believe the victim. And as we know, with lots of sexual assault crimes, that victims have, you know, have been traumatized, and you can't really go with, you can't look at a victim and take everything that they say immediately, because trauma has a very serious effect on a person's memory and the events that they've been through. So another reason they don't send kits to the lab is because the assailant is known to the victim. So they figure, you know, they're going to send this kit off, and they know it's going to be Joe's DNA that they find. So the police think, you know, why do we need to send this kit off to the lab? Also, rape kits are expensive to test. They are one of the most expensive pieces of evidence to test, because frequently they have not just one piece of DNA evidence to test, but several pieces of DNA evidence to test. So one kit can cost $800 to $1,500 to test. That's quite expensive. In Washington State, as in most places around the country, our crime lab here is woefully underfunded. So, as you said earlier, you know, we all see Law and Order and we're like, send it off to the lab. But what happens is we don't have enough scientists to test it. The DNA process of testing is a long one. We have backlogs at the crime lab here, so it takes about, even if your kit goes to the lab, it can take 3 to 6 months to get that kit back. just because they're so bogged down at the crime labs. And then the last reason it doesn't go is if a survivor doesn't want to pursue their case. That would be another reason why a kit goes up on the shelf.
Well, and in that case, it would be legitimate for them to not send it in, right?
Yes. So that is a little bit of a complicated answer. Yes, it is. And
as soon as I said the question, I thought that, well, maybe not.
Right,
rapists
yeah.
Because rarely do one single offense, right?
Yeah. So typically, like, the reason a survivor may not want to pursue their case is because they're either intimidated by the attacker, they know the attacker, it may be a neighbor or a family member or a boyfriend or who knows. But then also, sometimes, and this has been proven in the past as we've been going through this process, is that the police haven't been very friendly to victims. And so the victim has already experienced this sort of feeling that their story isn't believed, and they're feeling like they're not going to get any satisfaction from the police. So they think, you know, why would I pursue this further? So that's really one of the outstanding reasons why a victim may not want to pursue their case.
Okay. You know, I've been so, in keeping with how disorganized I am today, I forgot to give out our phone number. If you'd like to join this conversation, maybe you've had experience with rape kits, maybe you know a friend or have some personal experience with the whole situation with rape kits and in any state, please give us a phone call. Join in our conversation. It is 646-378-0430. 646-378-0430. And on our webpage, you can click on chat if you don't want to talk personally. I have a chat room open, and you can post a question or a comment there, and I'll share it for you on the air. So again, 646-378-0430. Okay, so it's probably not necessarily the greatest idea to just have a victim say, well, I don't want to pursue it, and so they put everything on a shelf and keep it. Who owns evidence that's collected at a crime scene?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that answer specifically, but if I were to make a guess, I would say it's in the custody of the police department that took
So it would seem reasonable that the police do what they want with that, with what they think is best.
Yes.
Okay, all right. It would be an it's an interesting question, though, isn't it? I would be interested to know exactly who, because after, well, I don't know. I was going to say after a crime is resolved, and then don't they give stuff back to the owners? But no, some of that stuff stays on shelves
forever.
Yeah,
there's a whole chain of custody, you know, that is involved when you're talking about evidence. And chain of custody is very important to keep that within the official boundaries. And I know much of the rape kits do, at least in Washington State. Other states, sometimes you'll find that the hospitals will be in possession of those rape kits. But in Washington State, usually they go, or the crime lab will be in possession of the rape kits. They may have a storage facility at their place. But in Washington State, most of the stuff goes back to the police department that it originated from, and then it goes into an evidence storage location, and it's kept there.
Okay.
And, you know,
forever.
It's interesting you bring that up, because here in Washington, we just recently passed some rape kit-related reform bills. Yay! And one of those bills, House Bill 1069, directly deals with the preservation of DNA evidence, many of that being rape kits. And we didn't really have any laws on the book prior to this one, which just got passed, where we had to keep rape kits. They could be discarded or destroyed, but now they have to be kept until the end of the accused person's sentence. And then once that sentence has been, worked out, then they can be destroyed at that point in time. But until then, you know, evidence, most DNA, most rape kits just went off to the evidence locker.
But and then they can destroy it, but they don't destroy the report, right? Because, I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, appeals and all that kind of stuff. Oftentimes
yeah,
those
so,
things.
Right. So we didn't have anything. And so it was usually just under the, you know, discretion of the police department. And, you know, storage is a big issue when you're talking about evidence for all crimes committed. And, you know,
well,
rape
yeah,
kits
because you
usually,
can't just. You can't
right.
just pop it anywhere. I mean, it has to be somewhere where it
mm-hmm.
won't degrade, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So so luckily we have just passed a bill that, you know, puts it into law that we have to keep those all that evidence, all DNA evidence, until the sentence has been carried out. So.
Wow, okay. All
yeah,
right.
Feeling good
okay.
about that.
Good. That's very good. And so mm-hmm. If the person isn't prosecuted for years, that evidence sticks around for years, right?
Yep, that's correct, if their case is still active, yeah.
Yeah. There is the issue, of course, with degradation even under the best of circumstances, but that's a whole
mm-hmm.
different show, I think.
Sure.
Okay, so what kind of a backlog does Washington State have now?
Well, so in preparation for us working on these bills in this legislative session, the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs were asked to go out and do an informal survey of all law enforcement agencies in the state to do a count of how many kits they had. So I think it's important to define backlog and shelved kits. So lots of times when you say backlog kits, which is the vernacular that's been used across the nation, but really backlog kits are kits here in Washington State. We describe them as kits that are in line to actually be tested at the crime lab. But shelved kits are kits that were never intended to go to the crime lab, and that's really what we're talking about here, like how many kits were never sent to the crime lab and put on the shelf. So I will call those shelved kits for now.
Okay.
The Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs went out and did this informal survey, and they think they're not for sure, and it's not an exact number, but they think we have at least 6,000 kits in the state. So that's statewide.
Okay. Which mm-hmm. is significant, but quite frankly, not as many as I thought.
Right, right. So it's not as many as you think when you hear New York had 17,000 and,
yes,
you know, Memphis
yes.
had 11,000, Detroit had 12,000 or thereabouts. It's not that much. It's not a huge amount. But, you know, as we are finding out, you know, you can get a lot of evidence and a lot of really bad people off the street with just with 6,000 kits. You know, like just looking at results that they've had in some other cities, you know, Detroit tested, they've been testing kits all along, but they tested 2,000 kits and they got 760 DNA matches and they identified 188 serial rapists. So think of how
wow.
many... Yeah, with 6,000 kits here in Washington State, there's quite a few criminals you can get off the street. Like in Cleveland, they tested 2,700 kits, and they had 90 criminal indictments from that, and a third of those cases involved serial rapists. So compared to other cities, 6,000 isn't a lot statewide, but when you look at the numbers of DNA matches and convictions and serial rapists you can find in 6,000 kits, you realize that, you know, it's a great place to start getting rapists off the street.
Well, exactly. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, 6,000 is still a whopping amount.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that,
yeah.
you know, the number, the sound of the number. And if you were one of those rape victims that is looking for justice and you know, you're afraid for
right.
the rest of your life to walk out
mm-hmm.
your door because for fear that guy's going to be there again, you know, 6,000
mm-hmm.
is a heck of a lot. One of the...
Right, I mean...
go ahead.
I was going to say, whether you have 6,000 or one, the necessity of testing those kits is very important to the victim.
Yeah. Well, you said that it's up to... the police officer or the police people who make the arrest. What if they just don't think it's? What if they think it's just a he said, she said, blah blah blah, and they don't take it seriously? Do police departments mm-hmm. recognize that it might be something that should not be? I mean, is it a prosecutor's decision? Is it the police officer's decision? Who makes the decision to follow up on the rape kits?
I think it depends on the police department. So every police department has different procedures, and sometimes the prosecutors do get involved. You know, I'm not specifically sure of how that process goes, so I can't really speak to exactly who knows what when and who makes choices along the way. Yeah.
All right. Just some of these success stories. You know, this article that I have from Feminist Newswire dated February 27th of this year, they said Houston cleared their backlog of 6,000 untested rape kits, and some of them were more than 30 years old, but apparently they were still able to get good data from it. And it said evidence from those test kits has led to 850 DNA matches, 29 filed cases, and 6 convictions. And police are continuing to review evidence from the kits to see if charges can be made in other cases. Because that's the other thing. I mean, once they have that DNA, then they have a murderer. They can match that DNA to a murderer, you know.
Yeah. There's a very interesting – here in Washington State, we had two prosecutors come and testify in front of our legislators as to what they have found in Cleveland. And this is just an example of what they've been finding in other cities. And Detroit is another place who's been at this testing for quite a long time and have also been making these connections, is that rapists don't just rape. They also commit lots of other serious crimes. And Cleveland found that they did a little economic study, and they took the first 229 indictments that they got, and they took those cases and they looked at them, and they found that all of those rapists had criminal records except for one of them, and they all committed other crimes, including domestic violence, burglary, breaking and entering, murder. So these folks are also career criminals. So it's just not rape they're committing. They're also committing lots of serious crimes out on the street.
Yeah. Another, you mentioned Detroit. They had over 11,000 kits.
Yeah.
And Memphis had almost 12,000 untested kits.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently... let's see. They currently have 4,000 kits in Las Vegas that haven't been processed.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. Oh, and this is what I wanted to talk about, too. Last November, Cyrus Vance, the district attorney of Manhattan, pledged $35 million to try to eliminate the backlog of up to 70,000 untested rape kits nationwide. So, in other words, New York got really on the ball here, and Manhattan eliminated all of their rape kits, and they had enough, and I read that they took it from confiscated funds. So in other words, when you do something
forfeit
bad, they
money.
Take your money and blah, 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 then they get to keep that money. And so what they did is they took money, for this $35 million, from confiscated funds from crimes, and they are actually making grants available to other cities.
They are, yeah.
To process the rape kits. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, so Manhattan has really been on the forefront of this. And since they tested their kits years ago and saw what great results they've gotten, they've just been really going out there and advocating for other cities to do the same thing. And, I mean, they're just like, look at these results. They cannot be argued with. And when they came up with this $35 million, it just really drove home, you know, how important they think it is to test these kits. And there is there's a Manhattan DA money that's coming out, and then the federal government has also pledged $41 million towards grants to start testing, not only test rape kits, but also to reform the system for rape kits. So the Obama administration put $41 million into the operating budget, and they have just released their grant information. And so they're going to be giving out 15 awards of $2 million each. And those, for any of you people who are interested in that out there, those grant applications are due May 7th. So that date is coming up. And they are working in conjunction with the Manhattan DA to put together these two programs. One, the federal government is centered around putting together a multi interdisciplinary groups to study why the backlog happened in certain jurisdictions, to train people on how to properly deal with victims and victim notification, and how to go forward to make sure this doesn't happen again. Some of the federal money can be used towards testing old kits, but not all of it. A lot of their concentration is really on putting together this system in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then the Manhattan DA project is mainly going towards testing old backlog kits. So a jurisdiction could apply for both of these grants and get $4 million to go towards testing old kits and also putting a system in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. It's an extraordinary opportunity. There's a lot of money out there for it.
Well, Erica, what I would suggest in your spare time is that you contact Louisiana, because Louisiana is charging rape victims to pay for their own testing kits.
Yeah, that is atrocious. It's atrocious. You know, you look at a place like Detroit, a city that has been bankrupt in the past couple of years, and see how hard they are working towards fixing the system. And Detroit is even put together, is working with a nonprofit group to raise private funds. They've just been very ingenious in figuring out ways to find money to test rape kits and find justice for victims. And you juxtapose that to what's happening in Louisiana, and it's just ridiculous. You know, Detroit is taking steps forward, and Louisiana, unfortunately, seems to be taking steps backwards.
It's just crazy. Yeah, Louisiana is charging. Now, I thought that the Violence Against Women Act was amended in 2005 so that sexual assault victims wouldn't be billed for their own forensic exams following their attack. But apparently, this was reported by the Times-Picayune, certain tests can be considered, it's one of those picky little things that, technically they can say, well, the cost for this procedure that's a regular part of the screening, sexual assault, is not specific to this exam, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's how they apparently are getting taken care of.
Yeah.
And these women are being billed for like $4,000 or $5,000 for this stuff.
Yeah, and you could see how that would not make you want to pursue your case. You know, it's like,
well, especially when you stop and think that, you know what, prisoners get free health care. Prisoners get their tests free. The state, you and I pay for it, you know? You know what I mean? I don't have a, you know, I'm like everybody else. I think I pay too much in taxes and I get cranky about it, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I'm willing to pay for this.
And when you see the results, when you see the results too, we're not just talking about finding justice for victims, although that is first and foremost. But, you know, for people who aren't victims and are out on the street, I mean, there's a benefit for everybody here. You know, there's a benefit for everybody. When you look at the statistics and see that one out of every six American women will be a victim of attempted or a completed rape, then getting those people off the street affects that. It affects the people who have been raped, and it affects people who haven't been raped. And, you know, so having rape victims having to pay to have their own rape kit tested is detrimental to everybody.
Happens if they can't pay it? What happens if they can't pay it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if somebody came, there have been plenty of times in my life where somebody came to me and said, okay, this is going to be $4,000. There would have been nothing that I could sell that would have provided that money for them. So I could foresee that, you know, in places like Louisiana, women victims saying, you know, I can't do that. I just can't do it. So don't do it.
Right. Yeah.
And so maybe that's part of the way Louisiana deals with their backlog. If you never take the test, the kit, you don't have the backlog. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you hope not.
There are only, but according to this Times-Picayune article, there are only 15 states that pay for tests for STIs and medications prescribed in the course of a forensic exam, and only 13 states pay for a pregnancy test after rape. Only 10 states cover the cost of emergency room fees for sexual assault. I mean, this to me is shocking.
Yeah.
And So, and the number of states that cover the cost of treating injury sustained during sexual assault, five.
Mm.
Five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to me, this is all part of the same package. I mean, we are woefully negligent as a community in
mm-hmm.
caring for people who have been sexually assaulted.
Absolutely, and it shows you, it's just indicative of how the process for dealing with sexual assault victims and finding them justice is broken. And, you know, testing rape kits and putting laws in place is just a small part of that larger picture.
Yeah. Well,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, you know, somebody could be creative and invent rape insurance.
That's
you know,
true.
I mean, if your home or car is attacked, you have some insurance, presumably, that will cover the cost of replacing
mm-hmm.
your car, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe we as women just need to, you know, take out rape insurance policies so that we're covered if and when mm-hmm. that happens to us. And as you said, some studies say as many as one in four women will
mm-hmm.
be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. So it seems
mm-hmm.
to me there's a terrific market there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe once your PhD is done.
Yeah.
Get started on that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go into the rape insurance business. Something
yes.
about that doesn't feel right to me. I don't
yes,
know.
Right.
I'm sure it would feel right to a lot of people, though. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got huge backlogs just about every place, but it
mm-hmm.
sounds like a lot of places are doing something about it. If I am assaulted, if I'm an individual mm-hmm. and I'm assaulted, and I'm in one of these states maybe that doesn't pay very much attention to rape kits or whatever,
mm-hmm.
what is it, can you advise us? I mean, I know that's not exactly in your bailiwick, but I think you're knowledgeable
mm-hmm.
enough to be able to give reasonable advice. What do we do? I mean, we're traumatized. We
mm-hmm.
we're dealing with a major trauma in our lives, but like in so many other cases, even though we are traumatized individually, we still have to take the bull by the horns and take charge of some things.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend that women do that? And if
yeah,
so, how? Huh?
You know, it's hard to say, yeah. You know, I'm not a trained rape counselor, so I have trouble answering that. But I will say, you know, that many states have rape crisis centers that definitely are very helpful, and they're also understaffed. And they are great places to go to. You know, I think every person should know that they can be an advocate for themselves. And if they feel like they can't do that, they need to do what they can to find somebody who can be. And there's lots of great organizations out there. I know that here in Washington State, specifically in King County, where Seattle is, we have the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center, which is fantastic. They provide all sorts of resources and support. They would be a great place to start.
Well, I think that, and there are national help lines and
hotlines,
numbers
yeah.
that will
mm-hmm.
that will get you to the help that you need.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
absolutely.
Most of these national, yeah, most of these national numbers will take your location and find places for you locally. So even
mm-hmm.
though they're big, huge national numbers, excuse me, the RAIN, Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, their number is 800-656-4673.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 656-HOPE. And they can, you get that first number and then you can get other numbers from them.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
What's your gut feeling? I mean, it seems to me that if I'm not able to handle advocacy for myself in that situation, I would hope that I have friends or family members who would do that for me and
mm-hmm.
fill that need. And it sounds like rape victims need to somehow or other advocate, either personally or through a representative, to get the treatment that they need and the follow-up that they need and the police work and lab tests that they need.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it isn't there yet, but hopefully at the end of this process, probably in a couple of years, depending on where you live, there will be programs in place where you can track your rape kit and see where it is. You know, if it's at the crime lab, if it's come back, what information has been found out. Victims will be given numbers and they can keep track of their kits. That's the goal. And that's also part of what's being discussed as part of these federal grants as well, is coming up with a system for that. And Detroit is very much at the forefront of that as well. They are partnering, I believe, with UPS. You know, they said if you can send a package, internationally in 5 days, then why can't you track a rape kit to the crime lab and back? And so Detroit is partnering with UPS to try and come up with some sort of logistics program to assist with that. So that'll be some really interesting technology, which I'm no techno buff, but it seems like that should be easy to do. So hopefully we'll get that in place. Here in the
well, and it does
sometime.
Sound easy to do. I mean, you order something from Amazon, you can track it. I mean,
that's right.
It's
get here in 2 days.
It's logical.
I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I ordered something once. I live in the Seattle area. Or actually, I live east of Seattle, and the package was sent from the UPS office in Redmond, which is like 3 miles away from me. And then it was sent to Seattle. Then it was sent someplace else. And then and 3 days later, and I thought, I could have just dropped by and picked it up.
Run over there.
Yeah, so I could have just run on over there, you know. Nevertheless, these technologies that we have, although frustrating to the nth degree, at least for me sometimes, can be useful and have an everyday application. I mean, why shouldn't we be able to know what the process is? And I'm sure that, you know, police officers and, you know, the people that are available for telephone calls would be delighted if somebody, they could refer somebody to a website where they could, you know, keep track of stuff, something like that. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and that's, as I mentioned earlier, that's one of the problems with just finding out, you know, how many untested kits you have as well that are on the shelf is, you know, so many different technologies have been used over, you know, 10, 20 years to track evidence, and none of them have been specific for tracking rape kits. So, you know, you have to find some sort of technologies constantly being honed and improved, and this could just be looked at as an improvement. I'm sure the police would welcome that as well.
Yeah, I think everybody would. I mean, wow. excuse me. Okay, I'm raped. I call the police, or I, you know, notify the police. And they send me to the hospital. What's the procedure there? What happens then? I mean, I get the impression from TV shows that everything just snaps into place and everybody has a job to do. And although certainly, what's her name? Mariska Hegarty is certainly very sensitive and loving. what's the likelihood that my local police department is going to be as sensitive and wonderful?
You know, it all depends on, as with everything, who you run into, right? You know, some people are better at things than others, for sure. And there's training out there that police departments can get to learn to be more sensitive in situations that involve victims of sexual assault. Right here in Washington State, we have an amazing advocate named Patty Powers, who works for the Yakima Prosecutor's Office. She's a prosecutor, and in her spare time, in her vacation time, she goes around the country and educates police and prosecutors on the nature of rapists and how to, you know, effectively deal with victims of sexual assault. So it all depends, you know, on the department and whether they've embraced the new thinking around dealing with victims. As far as hospital stuff goes, there are specially trained people called SANS nurses who are specially trained to take rape kits and to take them in a sensitive and most respectful way. You know, a rape kit process can take 4 to 6 hours to take at a hospital, and it is no easy task. So agreeing to have a rape kit taken is not just a cavalier thing. It is most likely to re-traumatize the victim. You have to think that the victim's body has now become a crime scene. And so there are lots of photographs taken and lots of any place that the attacker might have touched that person has to be examined and samples have to be taken. So it is a very long, arduous process. And so SANS nurses are a part of making something that would not be easy a little bit easier. But not all jurisdictions have that. You know, Seattle, we have them. We're a larger city. We have a big public hospital here called Harborview, and that's where most rape victims are sent because we have SANS nurses there. But you're not going to find that. You know, you're not going to find that in every city or, you know, even places that don't have cities. So it can be a difficult thing. You know, it also speaks to the fact that, you know, a victim who has a rape kit taken is, you know, is focused on wanting to find justice for herself. It's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, if you are a victim of rape, it's best to try and find yourself at a hospital that has SANS nurses. Or advocate in your community.
You know, I mean, I can't imagine going, okay, I was just traumatized, I was just raped, I was brutally assaulted.
Yeah,
now
exactly.
Let me see, I'm going to call the hospital, find out which
mm-hmm.
of them has the SANS nurses.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know if you've ever had children, but when you have children, sometimes if you're really fortunate, they have a thing called a doula, which
mm-hmm.
is somebody who's solely there to focus on the mother, not the
mm-hmm.
baby that's coming,
right.
but just
mm-hmm.
the mother. And I am such a firm advocate that we should just have life doulas. We should have divorce doulas. We should have rape doulas. We should have, you know, we need someone to do that for us. And
mm-hmm.
unless you're
mm-hmm.
really, really fortunate and have family or, I mean,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't even really matter how much they care about you. It's do they have the expertise and the experience and
right.
are they able to do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, they can be very
mm-hmm.
well-meaning, but that doesn't mean that they can do a good job of that, and,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
to me, I
yeah.
think we need life doulas, so maybe we need, you know, rape doulas, and, you know, we
mm-hmm.
can help folks out, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely.
In this situation, because,
mm-hmm.
Wow, that's tough, you know, to think that you'd have, although, you know, in all fairness, some people, when they are traumatized, it is very helpful for them to become focused on action.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm sure there are those women for whom, you know, that would be, they are able to do that and
mm-hmm.
advocate for themselves and learn what they need to learn and all that kind of stuff, but
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us would not be able to do that necessarily,
mm-hmm.
and it's a shame because
you're
just kind of hanging out on your own.
And I think in many places there is a lack of SANS nurses. So for any nurses who are out there interested, you know, they do have training programs across the country and various places to go through. Usually I believe it's like a weekend seminar where you can be trained to be a SANS nurse in addition to your regular nursing duties. So, you know, for folks that are interested, if you just look that up on the web, I'm sure you'll find all the different trainings that are going on around the country, and maybe there's one near you where you could attend.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They should have more information about that just floating around, because I'm sure there are plenty
mm-hmm.
of people who, young people, are making a career choice or people who've been in the field. And
mm-hmm.
you know, okay, that's my social commentary. That and the doulas, that'll do it for me.
Right.
Okay. Okay. All right. So if you can find somebody, it sounds like, to assist you when you're going through some sort of trauma, if you can find somebody who can really just focus on being a liaison when it comes to the rape kit and the evidence and you know,
mm-hmm.
Billing for that,
mm-hmm.
that sounds like it would be a really, really grand plan.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people could find that kind of a resource when they're in this situation.
Yep.
For women who are looking for some sort of way to follow up on rape kits, maybe they're in an area where a rape kit hasn't been processed, they want to advocate, what do they call their prosecutor's office? What would they do?
Usually you have to call the investigator at the police department. So most cases get assigned, again, it depends on your police department, will get assigned to an investigator, and that investigator would be the one who would know where your kit is. At least that's how it's handled in Seattle. So usually the police are the ones that you have to contact. It depends, you know, on how far along in the process it is. If it has entered the prosecution phase, then, you know, you'd have a prosecutor and victim's advocate and people like that who would be in connection with you about the case. But before that, when things are still being investigated, it would be the police department.
Okay. Do they have? Do most police departments have some sort of liaison where, if I want to just call and say, okay, you know, what's happening here? What is? Is there somebody, some office or something that they can go to when it comes to the rape kit issue? Or do they have to go straight to the police officer? Or do you know?
Lots of departments, big departments, like Seattle, you know, we have an SVU unit, and there's, you know, people at all levels within that SVU unit. And so your case would be in that unit, and those would be the people you would call who would know, you know, you'd, like I said, you'd be assigned a detective or investigator, and that would be your contact person. Smaller jurisdictions, you know, sometimes they're not broken out like that. You know, it just depends on how big your town is or your city is. But usually, you know, you should have contact with a police officer, and that person would probably be your point of contact.
Okay.
And, you know, as much as you could, I encourage you to be insistent, you know, about knowing where your kid is and why it's being sent to the lab and when it's being sent to the lab. And, I mean, it's about you and your crime, and you have the right to find out where that kid is. So don't worry about being a pain in the neck. You know, just call and find out about it. Find out where it is. And if you can't, if it's too much, then find a victim advocate to do it for you.
Mm.
It's important.
It is. And fortunately, again, I'm going to give out this number again for RAIN to try and get you to an organization that can help advocate for you in your area. 800-656-HOPE. 656-4673. So if you're in that situation, if you're trying to figure out what's happening with your rape kit, and you haven't yet connected with a rape support organization, call that number and they can direct you, help you find an organization that you're in your area. How long have we been doing rape kits?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. As long as I can remember, you know. I don't have an exact date for you or year, but rape kits are, you know, when they were brought around, when DNA evidence became something that we could depend on and test for, and you know, there's been various stages and honing in of DNA evidence and test results, but when they first came onto the scene, it was very exciting because this is really a way to be able to prove that somebody was there and had sexual contact with someone. And then and now, they are still touted as the best avenue for catching your attacker. So they're still super important. And, you know, we do, you'd mentioned CSI earlier, and all DNA evidence sort of falls under what the crime labs will call the CSI effect, where, you know, we expect DNA to be able to work a lot of magic, and it does in a lot of circumstances. And rape kits are super important. That's what they do. They deliver the results, you know, and we're seeing that across the country.
Okay. Rape kits, I think it's important to know that men get raped too. Not at the same rate as women do, but what men get raped too, especially younger men and children.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking rape kits, we're not just talking a woman's issue. We're talking a people issue. Although I have to tell you, I've said this before, my daughter always gets mad at me when I say women's issues. She goes, all issues are people issues. There are no such things as women's issues. And I just look at her and I think, honey, I did something right raising you. However, I admire your idealism so much.
Right, yep. But sometimes we have to focus on women's issues so they can get the attention they deserve.
Exactly. And I think that it's important for all of us to understand that rape kits are not just a woman's issue.
Right.
People
mm-hmm.
get raped.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
rape mm-hmm. kits are definitely a people issue. And so mm-hmm. if, you know, a child is raped and you're in a state where they charge you for the rape kit, you as the parents are going to pay for that. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a people issue that we all need to be concerned about.
Aware of. And it's also important. I think it's also important, sorry to interrupt, I think it's also important to point out that rape is a crime that's committed to all people across all, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds. And, you know, with one in six women and men as well that get raped, it's most likely that everybody knows somebody. They may not have told you, but you most likely know somebody who has been raped. So, you know, rapists have propensity for violence, and they are recidivists, and they will rape on average 11 times in their lifetime. That's a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
And you could be waiting at a bus stop, you could be going to your car in a parking lot. It doesn't matter, you know, what you look like or who you are or where you came from. So it is very much an issue that affects everybody. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think it's really crucial for us to understand that, okay, if we get a DNA test, if the rape kits are designed to find the rapist. But as
mm-hmm.
you pointed out, rapists
mm-hmm.
usually aren't just rapists. You know,
mm-hmm.
bad people are bad in many areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
in many ways,
sorry
yeah.
for that huge
mm-hmm.
generalization, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who break laws usually break laws in many areas. People
mm-hmm.
who assault usually assault in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so to think of these rape kits sitting on shelves as being only a rape issue
mm-hmm.
Is so short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so
Absolutely.
Short-sighted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And it seems from our conversation and from the reading that I've done that the idea that rape kits are sitting on shelves seems to be a financial issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's partially a financial issue. It's partly a financial issue, and then it's also an issue of how victims of sexual assault are viewed. So those are two things that have to be combated. One is the attitude towards victims of sexual assault needs to be changed. People need to be educated. And then two, it costs money to test kits, and it really costs money to test 6,000 kits. So that, you know, the money issue is just a very budgetary, cut and dry kind of thing. You know, and changing people's attitudes is a much harder thing, much harder process. But the great news, and I keep coming back to this, the great news is places like Detroit and Cleveland are way ahead of the rest of the country, and they've created this blueprint on how to change the attitudes of police and prosecutors and various other people about kits and rape victims. And so although money is a big part, you know, once you've changed people's attitude, you still have to come up with the money to you know, test all those kits. So, you know, that was one of our biggest battles here in Washington State just recently with a bill that we passed is everybody believed in the bill, and they said, where are you going to get the money? So,
yeah. Well, that's the first question. And quite frankly,
mm-hmm.
that's the first question that the government should ask is where are,
right.
how are we going to pay for it? I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what we do
mm-hmm.
with our home budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, we really need a new, you know, the water heater died. We need to, how
yep.
are we going to pay for it?
Right.
It's a legitimate
right.
question. However.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Yes. And that's in part one of the reasons we have a backlog is because jurisdictions don't have money to send every single kit. You know, many of the law enforcement people I talked to, you know, in the past couple of years, they've all said, if I could have afforded to send every single kit to the lab, I would have done it. But I can't. You know, they have priorities too, and they have budgets. So, you know, that's also a part of being able to properly handle rape kits is, you know, our jurisdictions have to be able to pay for it. But luckily we're looking at that. You know, like I said, there's the federal money and there's the Manhattan DA money out there. Washington State, hopefully we'll see here in the next couple of weeks, will fund this bill, we hope. We're working hard towards that you know, get the ball rolling. So it's a good start.
Well, and, you know, Okay. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry about that. Just as we make decisions personally for what things we need, you know, we prioritize. And governmental budgets usually have quite a bit of stuff in them. I mean, pages and pages and pages and pages. And it seems to me that if we prioritize our things, solving crimes and getting criminals off the streets and prosecuting rapists should be right up there.
You know?
It should be right up there. And I mean, I would rather avoid a few potholes and know that some rapist has been put away, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I have to say, I'm sorry again to interrupt you, sorry, but I just got so excited because when Mary Weston from the Cuyahoga County from Cleveland came to testify here in support of our rape kit bills, and I'd mentioned earlier that they did an economic crime study of those first 229 indictments, and they tried to put a dollar figure on the harm that was done to victims in the community by those 229 folks, and it came to $122 million. And, you know, it would have cost a lot less to test all those kits than $122 million. So in the long run, you know, the long run, which is really hard to see sometimes, it's less expensive.
Erica, we are Americans.
Right?
We do not look at the long term, okay?
We don't have that much history here.
Become
but we're
more
drawing.
Culturally sensitive, please. We are just not good at looking long run.
We don't do the long game, do we?
No, we don't. No, we don't. We have the crazy pendulum. We go all the way from that upswing straight through the level bottom and all the way up to the other, you know, We're almost out of time, and it's been such a great conversation because it really makes me feel positive and hopeful. If there is someone out there who wants to become involved in helping the situation in their state or in their county or in their district, what would you suggest they do?
Well, people can always contact me through the rapekitwa.org site, and I'd be happy to share with them how things worked here in Washington State and what was productive and what wasn't. But I would also suggest that they go out to the endthebacklog.org site, and that's the site that's run by the Joyful Heart Foundation. And they are – it is the spot to find rape kit information and backlog and what's happening across the nation. All the newspaper articles are there. They have a chart of the states, and they can tell you, you can click on your state and they can tell you what's happening in your state or what's not happening in your state. And you can see at what point in the process your state is in. And you can always jump in at any point. If you are inspired to become a part of the process, then I can talk to you about ways to do that, or you can talk to the people at End the Backlog. Send them an email. That's what I did in the beginning just to double-check to see if anything was happening in Washington State, and they answered me right away. They're really great, and they're very, very helpful. So I would encourage people to go
not,
to...
so what?
Right.
If they're not... so what?
And sometimes...
I should write that down. That's my new motto. If they're not, so what? You know, sometimes, you know, we don't always encounter nice, wonderful, cooperative, thankful
That's
people
right.
when we want to get something done. And so if you feel strongly that this is something you want to do, it's great
do
if
it.
You encounter people who are happy to have you on board. But even if you don't encounter those people, so what? Keep
do
doing
it anyway.
What you have to do.
Yep, right.
Exactly. You know, Erica, one of the things that I try to do with our show is to find an appropriate quote to end our shows. And this one, oh, gosh, the number of quotes about rape and rape kits and da-da, you know, I mean, just never ending. But this one seemed appropriate to me because I like to focus on positive stuff. And Alice Siebold, I hope I'm saying her correctly, she's an author, written, best-selling author, da-da-da. And this quote is from her, and I think that it is just so spot on. You save yourself or you remain unsaved.
Very true.
So we got to get out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you think you can't advocate, then you can at least find somebody who can advocate. If you think you can't help that situation, you know, then at least go find other people who can and see what you can do to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being
Absolutely.
With us, Erica. I've learned a lot. And,
my pleasure.
And I'm really stoked.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm really stoked.
Mm-hmm.
Join us next week. Next week we're actually going to have a rerun because I'm going to be in Ireland. Aha! And so we'll play next week a nice one from previous popular shows. Thank you so much for joining us. Three Women, Three Ways.